amazing?
Is it amazing?
WEFT, you're here with me, celebrating a little music. We love to do these things, we love to have that fun. We love to do these things on WEFT. Who knows, this could be the new jingle for WEFT.
Repeat that.
Who knows, this could be new jingle for WEFT.
Freestyle.
WEFT.
WEFT. WEFT. WEFT. WEFT.
WEFT.
WEFT. WEFT. WEFT.
Prepared for, yeah.
This hour of programming is brought to you by the Urbana Park District and the listeners of WEFT. Urbana Park District facilities are open and the Park District is slowly restarting its programs. Please visit www.urbanaparks.org for more information.
This is Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial. And, I want to go back to Rantoul, to the Pope Prairie this week. It was a huge storm came through. I went up there on Friday and it was good, nice weather, but some of the corn was lodged and trees were down here and there. So I went early and was casing out the Pope Prairie. One big tree down across our access road. It can be removed. So I was there not only to check out the prairie, but to also meet with a contractor. And we have some past era dumping, which is very awkward. It's awkward to maintain. It's not beautiful. And we would like to landscape the area so it would be much more ambient. So I've been talking to a family that owns, well, their homestead is just across Route 45, so it's very, very close. And the leader was a planner, a city planner for the village of Rantoul. So we know each other from a long, long time. And he has four generations of children and they live in the area. And one of them is a contractor. and they're interested in helping, and we're not looking for free, but we'll put quite a bit of money into trying to tidy this area up. We don't exactly know what was there. Sometimes it was a dumping ground for things like culverts being vacuumed out and the junk dropped on a vacant space, which was a gravel pit. So I am very pleased with the prairie. It's at the moment, the grasses are growing well. Some of them are 8 feet tall. There are a range of grasses. There's sort of areas where grasses accumulate with each other, and there are grasses growing in the prairie itself as individuals. These are clump grasses that don't spread out like your lawn. They're a clump, and they have deep, deep roots, fibrous roots. At the lower level where there's water, cordgrass accumulates, and it has a 10-foot fruiting body. It leans over, so it doesn't look like 10 feet, but it's got rhizomes, and if we want to increase it, we can move our rhizomes. If you put seed together, it takes 10 years before the seed gets to the point where you can see it. Medium, as you go up the Bloomington Moraine, you're getting big blue stem Indian grass and perhaps some switchgrass. And then on top of the hill or in dry places, like on old interurban corridors that had some gravel, then it's little blue stem and boodaloo or side oats. And there's a needle grass that grows there quite well. So as you walk into our prairie from the north, section roads 3200, you'll encounter, first of all, Equisetum. Equisetum is an interesting plant where all the leaves have been reduced to almost nothing, and the photosynthetic body is the stems. So it's photosynthetic function is through the stems. And it comes in large clumps, usually, and it has fruiting bodies on the top, and it's a little on the primitive side. If you go past that and past some of the ugly area that we want to clean up, and then you get to about the middle of the prairie, and you can look from an old Route 45 road, you can look across a gravel pit where 8 feet of gravel, glacial till, was removed for road pack, and probably other purposes too, but it's a very good road pack. And you can see the native vegetation on the other side of the gravel pit. The gravel pit is regrowth succession. That means it's the prairie that was around in remnant areas has repopulated the gravel pit, but it's very difficult soil for plants to grow in, and they're invariably shorter than their counterpart that would grow on a soil that had not been disturbed. But there they are. The peak of some of the prairie blooming has gone by. The purple coneflower, which sometimes is very dominant, has passed, and it is now in its seed stage. If we have people to pick it now, that is mature enough that it can go to another site. But then there are some broadleaf plants that are a little more prominent than the general broadleaf plants. One is a compass plant. It is tall. At the moment, it's in flower. It has a capitulum or a head and a nice yellow flower, and they're in clumps, and they're heavy, and they're heavy enough that they make this 10-foot stem lie down, not totally, but bend over. Sometimes the animals know that. A squirrel will actually waddle up the stem and get the seed from the top. So this plant is drought resistant. It has invaginated leaves which drop of some of the breathing pores that would lose water to evaporation. It has rosin in its context. It has hairiness. The stems are hairy, so the wind doesn't blow the moisture out of the stem. And it has probably up to 12-foot taproot with a crown that's about 10 inches across. We've dug these things up at Fisher, not too far away, and a mature compass plant, the top 2 feet can weigh 45 pounds. So this is visible. We don't have a lot of it at Pope Prairie, maybe because I'm not too sure, but it may be cutting out. The dock may go further north than the compass plant, but certainly it grows further north as well as here. The dock, which is also a sylphium, belongs to the sylphium family, is somewhat more refined. Instead of having clumps of flowers up a rather rugged stem, it has refined fruiting body that goes probably not quite as high as the compass plant, about 6-8 feet, and a cluster of flowers at the top that are also capitulums or sunflower type flowers. And there's quite a few of these fruiting bodies, and a lot of the leaves that belong to the dock. The dock has a full leaf, not invaginated like the compass plant. It's a leaf you can put your hands on either side and you can feel it's cool. So the plant is evaporating moisture and cooling its leaf. Rather unique and interesting. And we have a lot of those dock. Then we have a range of other plants, some of them on the tough side because this is tough territory. There's rosin weed with opposite leaves, and there's prairie roses. I have a list of them here somewhere. Spurge, which is fairly common, yellow coneflower, prairie rose, I think I might have mentioned. There are legumes. There's Babtisia, which is the legumes at the moment are past their flowering stage. Babtisia has big pods, almost as you could rattle. You've got to be quick to get the seed because it's proteinaceous, and there's all sorts of creatures that like to use it. There's a lead plant and prairie clover, and they're all there and doing well. Overall, there's a liatris. There's a couple of different types of liatris. One is a blazing star, which has a full plume up a stem, and otherwise there's a button liatris, which has little bumps of flowers down the stem. It flowers later. So yesterday's button liatris was not yet flowering, but the gay feather certainly was. And if you stand off, you can see a blue haze, which is the elytras. It's kind of a diplomat, and it's in full bloom at the present time. And it's the sort of thing that you ought to visit to see. There'll be individual specimens here and there, but also a crowd in some places. There's a small creek that runs through, so where we have wetland species. And so very nice to be there and to share that experience. It will be a long time before the groups of organic matter get together and invite in other plants that are more sophisticated. And we have to be aware that there are other creatures that are going to use this territory, especially deer. So we don't put out really delicate plants that we have to evolve in a greenhouse and then transplant out in a place that is their niche or their domain. So it's not just deer. There are lots of mice, meadow voles, and there are snakes that find these mice, and there are also butterflies. And it's amazing, if you have a little territory, the butterflies will come, the insects will come, and there are sounds of the insects. And so I met up with the contractor and took him on a brief tour of the gravel pit prairie and of the remnant prairie. And then we looked at the dumping area, where we don't exactly know what's there. And so it might be that we open up a territory, but I think it's okay. But it, certainly we would need to be able to walk around and maintain that area. And it's near to the north entrance to the prairie, and it should not be an ugly sight with a dumping there. And there's some fence posts that we'll save, but there are also logs of wood that have been dropped there. Some of those we'll put along the roadside so that people can sit occasionally. It's not easy walking around the prairie, especially. I was wearing Wellington boots, and Wellington boots don't fit very well, but they do prevent ticks from climbing up your trouser legs. And so when we work there, we usually have those sorts of boots. I did a lot of walking. After the contractor left, I went back to take some photographs. And interestingly, we had a meeting at WEFT on Zoom, where they're trying to put together a Zoom a WEFTfest and doing some promotionals. And one of the questions was, can there's a couple of us that do visual work as well as radio. So we have a radio program that we double as a visual program with the help of Babana Public Television. And that visual program goes up on UPTV Channel 6 twice a week, and then up on video on YouTube. So there was some debate about, could we have a clip? So I thought, well, this is a good time for a clip. We'll go take photographs of the Leatris and do some short 20-second pieces on specific plants. And a rail car came by, a train, a manifest train. A manifest means that it's got a mixture of freight cars on it. And that's enough to remind us that most all of the prairie preservation that's available to us is on railroad lines or abandoned railroad lines. And so I'm hoping that there might be a small clip. The WEF sessions with music is recorded visually too. So we might be looking for a blog or something that will help WEF advertise its fall fundraiser and also give people information about what WEF does and for us what UPT does too. It's not always easy. I carry a cell phone, but a cell phone doesn't have the quality of video. On the other hand, video is very expensive of time, and you have to edit it, and it's quite a task. We're proud when we get something. We do, if we record in video, we're recording many gigabytes, so that's a challenge too. We have to have the capacity to hard drive that sort of information. And I was pleased to be there, and later I met up with the family, the Ogden family, that their home base is across the road, and I've known the senior member of the family who has been a city planner for Rantoul for many, many years, and so this is not new. Reuniting principles and deeds, and I thought that was rather wonderful. And interestingly, early in the morning, the Department of Transportation accumulated, and they were going to oil and chip the section road, 3,200, and the equipment arrived, and I was somewhat amazed. There's a truck that goes first with oil. It's an emulsion. It includes some water and oils, and it has a spray across the back, which is about the width of a road, and lay down oil. So all of a sudden, your road is all oil, and you wonder how you're going to step across the road. But shortly comes another piece of equipment designed for this purpose, and it puts down chipped gravel. And it does it very quickly, and it takes on gravel with trucks that back up to the back of the piece of equipment. And as it goes forward, so the truck goes backward and lifts up its tip truck element, its hydraulic hoist, and drops that gravel into a bin that becomes the chip that goes, the spreader puts on the road. That truck, once it's empty, will move out and around, and another truck will back in. So there are a sequence of trucks that are providing the gravel. Once the gravel is put down, you can stand on it. but it's also rolled, so it's pushed into that oil, and then you can walk on it and drive on it almost immediately. If these people have a straight go, they can do up to 15 miles of this sort of oil and chip in a day. And it does improve the road surface. So that I was impressed with. And I talked to the township supervisor. The various township supervisors, when an oil and chip road is going through their territories, they provide the tandem trucks, or they're not tandem trucks, they're single axle trucks, but they take this load. And so each township supervisor gets together and provides trucks. And if there are 10 trucks, then they're coming from different areas. So they work together. I talked to the township supervisor. His name was Scott Rogers. He was born and bred in Rantoul, Fisher, Tomlinson, Prospect, Ludlow, and he really belongs to the area. He's also a farmer. And we chatted away for quite some time. We both had things to do, so we couldn't go on forever. But he was there to organize his work crew, which was doing very well. And one of these days, I'd like to have him on as a guest, because he knows the territory, and we need to know the territory. We would love to have a 10-mile concrete road, which is this old Route 45 hidden in the bushes. It's been replaced by a new, wider Route 45. And I got the message that probably it is cheaper to tear out the old and put in a new to meet the new demands for widths and all the rest of it. But I think there's something to be said for archival stuff. This is an old road which started out as a corduroy road and took you 3 days to get to southern Illinois, to places like Cairo. It has been probably in the WPA, the work details that went with the 1930s depression, probably put in the concrete road. They didn't leave a lot of gap between the concrete that they put in on the road. So every once in a while, on a hot day, the concrete expands and makes an explosion. So we'll have to deal with some of that, because people don't realize those bumps are there and they can fall over and break an arm or whatever. So we have to do something about that. But I am tempted to think that this is an old road. It has, its culverts have been taken out for liability reasons. And there's little pieces of asphalt here and there. It's not your most pristine highway. It was a highway, but it's history. And I would think that in some ways it's cheaper to do it with its history than to recreate a whole new 10 miles. So those thoughts were in my mind as I talked to the township supervisor. I went back into the prairie to take photographs, and that was interesting. I found New Jersey tea growing, and quite a lot of, it's interesting to be there to know where the liatris is, because on part of that prairie, we have some attempted agriculture, and we are recreating prairie in that site. So I noticed that there was not a lot of liatris or gray-headed coneflower at that point. So it gives me a chance to know where I can plant seed. It's not an ideal time to plant seed. We often do it during the winter so that it sinks down into the snow and gets a start before spring. We have seed and we have the opportunity to know where we might be deficient in plants. So, now, not unrelated, I was working outside on Market Street, and Ralph Ruther, who lives in Pisotum, shouted to me. He has had a fond place for some roadside prairie in Pisotum, and just this week it was mown, and that's rather disappointing, and we got together about that. Often the mowing is done by farmers who are adjacent to the road. They don't own the road, so they shouldn't necessarily be mowing it. But cleanliness is close to godliness, so those two little plots were lost to accumulated background of prairie. Here are people putting in milkweeds and backyard prairies, and we need to make sure that farmers know the value of the natural areas that are on their roadsides. It doesn't have to be mown, and it certainly doesn't have to be herbicided. And there's a feeling that there'll be creatures in there like locusts or whatever that will invade the crop. Not so. The crops are monocultures and they have their own particular diseases. And there's also the neatness syndrome, and there's also time on the hands. So if you have a tractor and a mower, there's cultural aggrandizement for mowing your roadside. But we hope that that will change. It's changing on the main roads. The 10 mile we're talking about from Rantoul to Paxton has signs all along it that say no mow, prairie preservation site. And we know that that will continue because the state has a detail which is oriented to preserving the dignity of roadside habitat. Not everyone thinks that way, but it's happening. It's very awkward for the people who have jobs mowing because it takes them out of mowing. I've been down on 45 at Savoy to see that there's a pension to start mowing roadsides on August the 1st. And I have been to check it out because the mowing is often done with a 15-foot mower and bush hog. And that's too much. In Iowa, where they only have prairies, they don't have a Shawnee forest and whatever, they often will make sure that the township supervisors have a small mower. And if they don't, they make sure that they bring one. It's called a midnight requisition. And they bring a small mower that will just mow down to the ditch. So we have that problem going on all around us. And so watch Route 45. It's well labeled as a prairie preservation site. I was there the other day. We have had for 30 years an erect form of prairie rose that is rather rare. And it's mixed up with hemlocks and other weeds, but there's a tremendous penchant to herbicide things. So that whole piece of preservation has been herbicided out, and it's with Roundup type systemic herbicide. And this goes on around the world, and it really takes out habitat for creatures that need it. And I'm disappointed about that one, and I will be talking to the billboard company that is involved, because I think the administration often has a sympathy for doing not so much herbicide, and not so much herbicide that kills for 3 years, which means you really don't have anything left. So I just hope to do something about that one. Now, I want to go back to a tax base. We received a postcard from DeWitt County to say that there's a small, narrow strip of right-of-way adjacent to your railroad bed in DeWitt County. And that is of interest to us. You have to know your way around. You have to go to the state tax people who are selling the land. What happens is, if you don't sell the land with the adjacent sale, let me repeat. We have a farmer who has gotten to be older, and the children have sold the land that is adjacent. This is just 3 acres, very narrow. And the family really appreciated the railroad bed and the adjacency to their territory, and they had this little strip which made the right-of-way wider. And we don't exactly know why they didn't sell the strip with the adjacent land, but we think it might be because they were giving us in it directly a chance to bid on this site. So it will have its original soil and its original plants. And we don't have a lot of money to do things here. An acre of land is running at $5,000 or $6,000, but here we have a strip of land which is just half a mile from the DeLand Weldon High School and grade school, and this is potential biology. And so I've been stomping around to find out where this was, because I didn't exactly know where it was. And I called the DeWitt County treasurer, and gradually I got access on the computer to the site. And I know it well. And if push came to a shove, I would love to buy that little piece of original ground. Don't know whether we can, but it's the process of going through tax auction is interesting. You have to, first of all, pay the taxes that aren't being paid, and then you have to buy the land from the county that has not had its taxes paid. And that may be, if land is worth 5,000 an acre at that point, it may be less than that because it has trees on it and it has vegetation on it and it has drainage on it. So that land might not be as valuable as 5,000 an acre. But we have to think about that. And it's interesting to see your railroad bed still intact. It's now 30 years since we bought it. It's a conservation area. And I had two elderly gentlemen approach me on Market Street and ask about the potential trail. I think everyone thought that if you buy the land, it's only for a trail, but not so. It's also for the prairie, the bacteria, the fungi, the unique habitat that is only present on railroad beds and cemeteries that have kept a reserve. So I think the two gentlemen that were talking to me felt that it was a problem, that it was sad that the trees are growing and that the area hasn't been developed. Well, I said, we're doing it slowly. We have an excellent 2 mile of trail in the Monticello area. It just got $63,000 to surface an extension that was put in at popular demand. Then we worked on 25 mile between Urbana and Danville, and that's come to fruition with help of a rail banking act, which is providing $12 million, plus the state is putting in money, plus individuals are putting in money, and it's being developed phases at a time. One of the more interesting ones is between Cincho and Urbana. So that creates a realization of what a rail trail is. People can see it, they can drive by it. They don't have to necessarily walk on it or ride a bicycle on it, but they can see people doing that. So we have good examples now, and it's almost ready time to think about a trail from White Heath to Clinton. On the other side, we have already I thought about bringing historic rail cars into Champaign on some of our 4 miles of abandoned railroad bed between White Heath and Seymour. And there's a whole discussion about another 7 miles, which is still active in the sense that it's got rail, but it's not active in the sense that it's being used to freight out grain. So you're very dependent on your friends and relatives to know whether you can do something about these things. There needs to be some planning. It's costly to have a strategic action plan. You need one that's for engineers and planners and stakeholders. That might be 30, 40, 50 pages long with maps and charts and details. It might be a state plan, it might be a local plan, but somebody has to start it somewhere. And we don't exactly have that for the Monticello area where we're talking about going from White Heath to Clinton. So we're dependent on volunteers who may be willing to do that sort of work. It involves computerization, and it involves meetings. And we've been not so good at that. We now have a Zoom administration, so we can bring together board members and make decisions about what we want to do. We essentially have to talk to each other. Just going to Rantoul and talking to people who are township supervisors and people who know the territory and planners from years before, is wonderful to do. And it does involve something that's slightly different than what it used to be 20 years ago, where you would get three people together and get to Springfield and get some action, and it's done. Now, these days, there's more opportunity for people to be there on the internet. But you do have to be somewhat able to handle that technology. And you have to realize there's a whole bunch of people out there that do not have a computer beyond an email. Then photographs and reports and discussion is very important. It's very easy to establish a naysay. And so we're very careful about not doing that. And so the two gentlemen that were disappointed that the trail had grown naturally, I have to say, conservation is a land use. That 30 years is preservation. And it may take a while before we get a trail in. And in virus time, it might take longer yet. But at least we have some connectivity there. A creature can fly along that corridor without a problem. We do have of a warranty deed in one location, which is rather disappointing because a warranty deed is a very good deed. We own the land. And so we've had to go to survey to justify it. Survey comes in several levels. One of them is if your friends and relatives and a tree at one end and a tree at the other, that's good enough for a line. If it's a railroad, it perhaps is a fence line that kept the cattle off the railroad bed. But if you are thinking to go to the court to take out a court injunction, then the survey will be very different. It will involve putting rebar down 3 feet under the earth to make sure that pegs are not removed, and it's very costly. So we're in the process of paying $12,000 to have a survey on a quarter of a mile. And so that's one of those situations where we're sitting in the wings, hoping that the national level of interest in trails, the interest in recreation and the health benefit of trails will be such that we'll eventually be able to bring a trail from Monticello through to Weldon Springs State Park, where there's an artesian lake, where artesian water comes up from the aquifers and fills the lake. We look at that sort of situation in several ways. One of them was, I mentioned it last week, we have a tax sale at White Heath, which would allow for railroad museum activity and would augment a Y, and the Y is where you have a triangle that you can turn a train around or send a train off in a different direction, either to Champaign or to Clinton or to Monticello. And so I don't know the result of Thursday's decision, and when the bids were open, who got to buy that piece. But that's another one of those situations where you have to do a lot of CEO type work. You need leaders who know how to do that. And the major conservation groups within the state and federal government and outside of it with private enterprise are running seminars that are webinars that look at how you can encourage this leadership so that when something happens like a tax sale, you have someone who knows what is going on and has talked to various people in the community. For instance, I wonder if the high school at DeLand Weldon really realizes how close this strip of land is to that high school and to the possible use of it as a biology situation. I'm waiting for relatives to come from Washington. They're Australians, a husband and wife and a five-year-old son. And they're working with the federal government to, as ombudsman in the military. But they come from Australia in a location which is behind our only mountain. It's about 7,000 feet high, which is not very high, but it's snow-clad, and it is on an escarpment which runs the water east into the Pacific Ocean. So you have fairly fast-moving water that's going east and somewhat wasted, and the possibility of taking some of that water and channeling it into rivers that flow into the internal part of Australia. It's called the Snowy Mountain Hydroelectric System, SMHEA, and it is a tourist attraction. It's sort of Australia's seventh wonder of the world. And so some of the water that flows east is dammed and channeled through mountains to several dams that are at each occasion water is used to create hydroelectricity. And there's a big irrigation storage dam called the Hume Reservoir at the bottom. Well, in order to put this organization together was a huge event. And one of the events was to put in a railroad from Albury, which is on the west side of the Mount Kosciuszko Mountain, and take a train up the rise so equipment could be brought into areas concerned. That has now been completed for many years, and but the railroad has been there, very seldom used except for grain and things like that. So it has been retired, along with a lot of the railroads in Victoria and New South Wales. But my relatives who are coming are living, or their home base. They're my sister's children, so one lives permanently in Albury, and one is here as an ombudsman person in the US for the moment. I have evil intent of thinking that they would like to see our trails. We can't be inside together too much. So I'm thinking that they may like to go to this, I think it's probably 30-mile long railroad that has been converted into a trail. And could they, as ombudsman, be able to go to that trail and improve it by organizing volunteers or perhaps providing equipment or materials? It might not be my relative's bag, so I have to be very careful about doing this. I like to think that many of the trails that are in the U.S. have been augmented and developed in the first place and then augmented by volunteers and people who have donated to these narrow strips. And this one is so attractive. It goes up the hill to the alpine areas. And could it be extended a little further to the peak of the mountain? That's a possibility. Could there be adjunct services on the way? The grandfather grew up, or father grew up on adjacent to this corridor. Could there be a demonstration dairy farm, or are there early settler buildings? How, if you're riding a bicycle, can you go off that trail and find features that are interesting? So in the next couple of days when my visitors come, I will be showing them some of these features and hoping perhaps that they might be involved in that sort of situation in Australia. There is the capacity that some of these trails are international in style. This one has that sort of potential. So that means getting together with tourist people to facilitate their hotels or motels that might allow bicyclists to join. It might not be bicyclists, it might be just hiking. And it's requires that leadership that we've been talking about. This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
On November 23rd, 2012, WEFT was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until December 1st of 2020. Our license will expire on December 1st of 2020. We have filed an application for license renewal with the FCC. A copy of this application is available for inspection at www.fcc.gov. It contains information concerning the station's performance over the last 8 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by November 1st, 2020. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at 113 North Market Street, Champaign, Illinois, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20554, or online at www.fcc.gov.
WEFT is currently offering our listeners the rare opportunity to purchase a newly created WEFT t-shirt. The t-shirt comes in four different colors, red, blue, green, or purple, with a WEFT design on the front and our program schedule on the back. Sizes medium through extra large are $20. Double extra large is slightly more at $22. Shipping is free, Limited numbers of shirts are available and popular sizes are available, so don't wait long. Please visit WEFT.